welcome to, well, April 2019, even though what you are about to hear is from way back in 2008. This is John McMahon, Assistant Professor of Political Science at SUNY Plattsburgh. What you are about to hear is an interview that myself and Jeffrey Graves did for our nascent podcast all the way back in 2008. Mike Gravel, former senator from Alaska, has recently declared that he is going to be running in the Democratic primary for the nomination in 2020, and Jeffrey and I were reminiscing about our old bygone podcast days. We were reminiscing about the fact that we actually interviewed Mike Gravel all the way back in 2008. So without any further ado, I present to you now a conversation between Jeffrey Graves, myself, John McMahon, and former Senator Mike Gravel at the, interestingly enough, 2008 Libertarian National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
And this is Jeff Graves and John McMahon broadcasting live from the Libertarian Convention.
We have with us right now Senator Mike Gravel, who is currently running to be nominated by the Libertarian Party for president. Senator Gravel, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you're running for the Libertarian nomination. So how is that going? How's that going so far?
Well, you can't really tell. Conventions like this are very exciting. Everybody's just moving around. There's just so much going on. I certainly think I've got a good chance of winning, but I don't have it locked up by any stretch of the imagination. Libertarians are very independent kind of people, and they're thinkers. And so all we can do is just make our case. And I've got a book, Citizen Power, that has just come out, and I'm giving it to delegates. I sell them, it's a source of income for me. But I want to give it to them because it's also a book that describes the National Initiative for Democracy, which is what I feel very deeply about, and that is to be able to empower Americans to be able to vote on all the issues that affect our lives. And until that happens, we'll never see fundamental change in our system of representative government.
Now, can you kind of explain to our listeners your transition from running as a Democrat to running as a Libertarian?
It wasn't a difficult transition, in quite the contrary. In fact, it was somewhat of a joyous transition, sort of free at last, free at last. As a young man, been in politics since I was 15 years old. I first ran for office in Alaska when I was 28 years old, and eventually got elected after running three times. Now, it was either the Democrats or Republicans. Those were two major parties at the time, and if you wanted to participate in power, you had to pick one of those parties. It was easy for me to pick the Democrats because they had a broader base. My base of power in Alaska was the Native community, the poor, disadvantaged. I never carried in Anchorage, which is the wealthier community of the state. I never carried it totally. I carried a lot of smaller communities. So I gravitated into that, and after I got elected, I became what people call a maverick. Well, that's a misfit, and I was a misfit. I recognize it now. I look back, but I fought for some issues that were very important. One, ending the draft. Two, stopping the nuclear testing in the North Pacific, bringing about the Alaska pipeline, and releasing the Pentagon Papers, and many other issues that were all libertarian in nature. In fact, I accomplished most of the things I'm known for in the first 4 years of my Senate career. And that was at the beginning. At the end of my first 4 years was when the Libertarian Party was formed. Right. So the party came in much after I was. In looking at my career and my thinking in philosophy, I was a classic liberal. That is a liberal that is totally imbued with freedom and liberty. And that we've moved away from that. And so I was a libertarian before the libertarian label became known. Now, when I left government, I just left government. Didn't want anything to do with government or politics. And then when I came back as a theorist, writing and studying and developing this legislation to empower the people, called the National Initiative, I knew I had to make this visible or known to the American people. The media in this country, by and large, mainstream, and the body politic, they're not interested in empowering the people. Quite the contrary, it dilutes their power. So I had to find a way to make it known. Running for president is one of the ways to make it known. But as I was running for president, looking at the other people, I think I said it very clearly in one of the debates, these people frightened me. because both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are still war parties. There are parties that are controlled by the military-industrial complex. There are parties that are controlled by the greed and financial services of Wall Street. And that's what has to change, because the average American is really, really coming upon hard times, and it's because these people have abused their power, have abused the power they have over government, and have skewed our priorities. So in becoming a libertarian, after they cut me out of the debates, because now I filed as a Democrat to get into the debates, they cut me out of debates because I wouldn't be a cheerleader. Mm-hmm. I pointed out that the Democrats were as much at fault as George Bush in going into Iraq, because they voted for it. And then I took him to task in last September for voting for the Lieberman II resolution to give George Bush the power to go into Iran. Mm-hmm. Now, this was done by the entire Democratic leadership. And so you're telling me, you know, why would I make a change? I mean, my change was overdue. It was overdue. And so once they cut me out, I had no reason to stay there. I'm back where I belong, and that is a party that honors, respects, and is prepared to fight for liberty and freedom, and that's what I'm involved with.
So what was that like to be on the stage with the Democratic presidential candidates, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, you know, and before that even, you know, Chris Dodd, Joe Biden, John Edwards, Bill Richardson? Did you feel like you were marginalized in those debates? Did you feel like that they were skewed in any way, or do you feel like that was just maybe how it came across on television?
Basically, all of the Democratic-sanctioned debates were grossly unfair. Grossly unfair. The networks would tell us, oh, we picked in the position on the stage out of a hat. Never did. They lied to us. I normally got 4 minutes. Hillary and Barack got 16 minutes. None of those debates were fair. We had a fair debate with the NAACP.
Right.
We had a fair debate with the Spanish television station, and we had a fair debate with the gay community in Los Angeles. So they were about really three good, fair debates where they treated everybody equal, everybody got the same question, and positioning was picked by at random. Those were fair debates. But all of the debates that were sanctioned by the Democratic Party with the mainstream networks were all that was cooked in the back room. And they determined, and I've got a book out on that one, subject mm-hmm. to, it's called Kingmakers. And they determined who was going to become, who your choices were going to be for President of the United States. And that's tragic, because we now looks like we're going to have Obama and McCain. And I'll tell you, it's a poor choice.
Now, keeping in mind this topic of third-party issues, do you see third parties as really kind of the future, is the only kind of refuge for dissenting voices? Do you think there's still in the future going to be room for voices such as yours in the mainstream parties, or do you think the only place left is going to be third parties such as the libertarians?
I think it's only going to be third party at this point. It's tough to project what the future holds. But just look at what happened when the Whigs lost their élan vital or their gumption or their courage. What was the result of that? The Republican Party came into being, and the first one was Abraham Lincoln. And so we could well see that now, where the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, or what I'd rather see, those two parties have a monopoly on power in politics and government. They use government money to sustain their power. What I'd rather see is if we could get a president who's a libertarian who would break that monopoly so that all parties, not just the Libertarian Party, but the Green Party, the Right to Life Party, all of these parties would be treated equally rather than the monopoly that's held by the Democrats and Republicans. It's not fair. Now, what will happen if I'm successful in getting the American people empowered to become lawmakers? That will diminish greatly the power of parties, because you won't be able to divide up the American public on parties. The people will identify their own self-interest, and they'll vote for that. And that will diminish the influence of the parties on government, and, of course, will diminish the power of lobbyists, because they'll still be there, but the people will be the senior partners in that partnership of the people legislating and the representatives in government.
Now, a big portion of your support and your outreach has been through, you know, very much like the grassroots, you know, media type stuff.
No, what's happened in my candidacy since I didn't have the resources, and I don't have any great skill in raising money. I just don't. Never did when I was in office either. I didn't come out any better than I went in. But what's happened is a lot of young people gravitated to my campaign. And it started with this rock in the water. There's a couple of young teachers, 24 years old, who came to me and said, look, we'd like you to do this. And I said, that's great. It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor about focusing on something in life, doing it, and then going on to your demise. Now, with the Obama girl and other things that I did that were very funny, I only had one criteria. As long as it's dignified and funny or serious. And RX has done some pretty serious cutting-edge stuff about war and all of that. So, and that's what's given me visibility far, far beyond the financial capabilities that I've had, far beyond. In fact, I've only spent, a little over $400,000 in this campaign. And the mainstream media and the other candidates that are left were afraid of me. I'm not afraid of me, but afraid of the message that I had.
Right. Now, speaking more about your message, so talk a couple minutes about some of your policies in your platform. What do you see as some of the most important issues in your campaign right now?
The first and foremost is, of course, to empower the American people, which means to bring about the enactment of the national initiative, which will not be done by Congress. It'll be done by the people. So we're going to need 60 million more votes. To vote on that directly, and that's a tedious process. Probably I would have a better shot getting elected president. But then if I became president, and this is not the law, I will then use the office of the president, the bully pulpit, to push the American people to empower themselves as lawmakers. We won't be able to really address the agenda that I have for turning this country around without the people. The Congress won't be able to do it. The other issue that I think is extremely, is, of course, the war. I want to pull our troops out. We can do it in 120 days, and I think we can do it without causing a civil war. We've been passing hard-earned tax monies of the American citizens in passing it out in Iraq with a forklift. Can you imagine picking up $100 bills in 20 tons of $100 bills and passing it out with a forklift? It's just an abomination, and these people in high office just take this. This is, we're just going to do that. We're going to go bribe these warlords. Well, they're only bribed as long as you keep giving them money. Minute you stop, and of course the corruption in the government that you have over there, they won't even let anybody, even their own people, investigate the corruption they have. And you see ministers that are in Iraq that then retire and go to Paris, and right now they retire or they're so corrupt they can't hang around. So they go retire with $10, $20, $30 million in Paris and London. This is our money. This is our tax dollars that was done that. And this is the leader. So ending the war is a very top priority. Along with ending the war, I would withdraw all troops from around the world. We don't need American military in 130 countries. We don't need more than 700 military bases around the world, not to be secure. Now, we need it if we want to have an American empire. Right. I don't want an American empire. I don't want the United States to be the policeman of the world. Now, that would be then the second point that I would do there is we need to bring about peace between Palestine and Israel. And a president who's prepared to do that right at the beginning can bring that about.
Not wait until the last 6 months.
Oh, and then it played a silly game that's played,
right.
With AIPAC and others. You know, we need an American that will put this country first. And putting this country first means bringing about a solution in the Middle East that accommodates the interest and the security of Israel, first and foremost. And secondly, of equal value, is the security of the people of Palestine. And I think I can do that. And then from there, now moving domestically, the most important thing of all is to change our corrupt system of taxation, mm-hmm. doing away with the income tax and the IRS, and putting in place a retail sales tax, which will change this country from a consuming nation to a savings nation. And it will bring in all kinds of investment so that we can, one, make education number one, so we can make a whole host of other issues that cry out for attention to be attended to.
Mike Gravel is a candidate for the Libertarian nomination for president, as well as a former United States senator. You can visit him at www.gravel2008.us. Mike Gravel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you for having me.
The Progressive Student Voice will be at the Libertarian Convention for the next 3 days. Check back for live updates on our podcast stream.